This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between. And they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Futuro.
I really care about the work. I really care about my communities. I really care about telling stories that take people from my community that have been relegated to the sidelines, that have been uncelebrated or ignored, and moving them into the ecstatic, into this bigness, because that's how I see my people. We loom large, no matter the forces of systemic oppression. Queer people and Latinx people and women, we loom large.
From Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, poet, performer, and educator Denise Roman makes music out of language. Poet and spoken word performer Denise Roman has been doing her thing for more than 15 years now.
The wooden house in Castañer didn't come with air conditioner or anything cool.
Her work, impassioned, lyrical poetry exploring topics like language, queerness, family, and her Puerto Rican heritage, has resonated with audiences across the U.S., especially among Latinos and Latinas.
The heat was its own kind of music, and so was Abuela, demanding, sharp-tongued. The kind of woman, I imagine, whose teeth grew in because she told them to.
But when she walks on stage, into the spotlight, staring down that microphone, the butterflies still come fluttering back every single time.
There's a lot of nerves. I don't think that they ever go away. After many years, I think I'm better at coming to expect that, yes, I'll be nervous. And I think that's a good thing. It means I care about the work and I care about the words. And so I tend to take a deep breath, something like that, and sort of think about the emotional energy that I want to bring. And that also the poem is calling for.
Denise grew up in New York City in the 90s and early 2000s. Before poetry, basketball was her first love. She played professionally in Puerto Rico after college. Then she pivoted, moving to Philadelphia to start a career in the arts. For Denise, who's 36 years old today, performance is the heart of her poetry. Denise has performed her spoken word on countless stages and venues, including at the Apollo Theater, in Harlem, and in the White House. She's also made waves on major digital platforms, earning millions of views on YouTube. Her accomplishments stem from a very personal journey, one that's looking at embracing her identity as a queer New Yorican. In this episode, Denise tells us about finding poetry in different chapters of her life and how telling her community's stories became her lifelong mission.
In high school, I was the captain of my basketball team. I did not read or write much for pleasure. I had a little notepad that I would sketch sort of jokes and rap verses. Me and my teammates, we would freestyle on the A train to the game. I didn't think poetry had anything for me. It sort of felt like a thing of the past. If I were to measure it up against the narrow lens of poetry that I was exposed to in my classrooms, right? So I'm 17 years old, and my best friend at the time, who lived in Union Square, wanted to head to the Eureka Poets Cafe, and I'd never heard of it before. It was a Friday night slam, which is the most popular night during the week. It is a packed room. They do, you know, borough shout outs like Queens, where you at? You know, Brooklyn, where you at? Bronx, where you at? I don't know if Staten Island gets a shout out, but Jersey gets a shout out. And then people from all over the country, you know, and all over the world sometimes are in this room, right? It's a melting pot. People of all different ages and different ethnicities in the room. But it's also a very POC space. And I'm sitting in the back on a speaker because there are no more seats left. And there's just like a vibration in the room. And I have no idea what's about to happen, but all I know is that it's probably gonna change my life. I graduated high school with a dangerous misconception that Latino, Latina, Latinx people didn't write poetry. I mean, I really hadn't read any Puerto Rican poets or Latinx poets as a young person. Then I hear poet after poet after poet talk about their own identity and belonging and cultural pride and the social inequity in the world. And so just hearing all of these stories really moved me because it shifted in a misconception that I had held that was really a lie, which was that in order to be a poet, you had to change how you sounded and that your experience really wasn't enough. I thought in poetry, you could really only write about nature and like bees and foxes and buffalo and the hillside. And growing up in New York City, I grew up in Hell's Kitchen. I didn't know anything about that. My environment, my nature was the pigeons on the street. I could describe how gum looks when it's been walked over 1,000 times and it's a black speck of a thing dazzling the sidewalk. I could describe to you the sound of the subway, what it sounds like when you step on those metal doors outside of the bodegas that lead you to their basements. Like, that was my environment. And hearing that reflected in real time was such a transformative experience for 17-year-old me. I came to poetry through performance, through listening and hearing poets perform their work on the stage. I remember, this is during the same period of time, 17, 18 years old, watching HBO Def Poetry Jam and watching two New Yorican poets, Lemon and Flaco Navaja, share a poem about being Puerto Rican. And they said, to be Puerto Rican is to be fly.
But to be Boricua is to be so much flyer.
And I was just literally running around the house, like, could not believe what I heard. But I knew that this art form was for me.
Few things remind me of New York City summers and New Yorican summers and the Piragua. I remember as I got older, they were harder and farther to find because they were moving out of our neighborhoods. They were being pushed out of the neighborhoods. And so it's really a conversation of gentrification and displacement too. So this is a queer girl's ode to the Piragüero. Oh, Piragüero, my first lover. The only man I ever wanted anything from. I sprinted half blocks for you, got off the bus 2 stops early, took the long way home just to see your rainbow umbrella. Piragüero, candy cool syrup god. Boricua Batmobile, wooden cart pushing, bobsled papi.
Seeing poets on the stage really resonated with me. I grew up in a very artsy environment. My father played saxophone and flute for Tito Puente for 25 years. So I come from a pretty musical background. And to me, language has always been physical. My mom was born in a small campo in Puerto Rico, entre Ajuntas and Lares. And so I come from people who tell stories with their whole bodies.
Who raised hell when they nicknamed your island delicacy snow cone, or worse, shaved ice? I trusted you. The hallelujah was... I trusted you. The hallelujah work of your bare hands, the dirty...
I don't see the page and stage as separate because oral tradition is incredibly valuable to our communities. The spoken word is as old as time. If you think about the songs sung or the way that news was delivered, the way that histories were passed down orally. Growing up in a household where I heard salsa, my mom's first language is Spanish, where I heard these rhythms out loud, it trained my ear to sort of listen to the temperature of language. I fell in love with how words made you feel through tone and pitch and inflection. If you listen to a salsa song, you don't necessarily need to know what the words are saying to understand the emotional temperature in that song. Sometimes I like to think of like the rhythm in my work as if like Joe Cuba's Boogaloo song, Do You Feel It? Tú Lo Sientes? Had a baby with Tito Puente's Rancancan. And I know that his may be ambitious, but I think it's probably the closest descriptor that I've had to sort of the rhythm and the musicality in my work, which I think is a big part of also my performance. Performance to me is an internal rhythm externalized. It's not another body. It's just an extension of the body of the poem. I'm 19 years old. I have been going to workshops at Urban Word NYC, which is a youth poetry organization in New York City. I had been writing poems, filling up notebooks, performing at rallies and open mics as much as I could. At the same time, I'm really starting to step into my identity in a lot of ways, but in particular, discovering my sexuality and discovering my queerness. And I remember I was performing a poem at the New Eureka Poets Cafe about this girl. And I remember up until that point, I had been changing the pronouns in the poem to he instead of she because I was not out. And that night at the New Eureka, I had no plans to stop doing that. But when I got up to the stage, when I got onto the microphone and I closed my eyes and I took that deep breath, something said to me that poetry is asking me to be a little bit braver tonight. And when I looked out into the audience, I felt cared for. I felt like I could take that risk. I was terrified, but I also remember after getting off that stage, feeling like it was the beginning of a new chapter of my life. That if I was going to be authentic in my poetry, I had to start being authentic in my real life. I don't know when I would have come out had it not been for poetry pushing me and giving me the strength that I didn't have at that time. And when I say poetry, I don't just mean the words and the stories, but I also mean the vibrant community of other young writers that I was building with. Feeling held and supported by them was also a big part of it for me.
Dear straight people, who do you think you are?
A lot of people initially, in a national sense, got to see my work when Dear Straight People went viral around 2013. And the interesting thing about that is that I was performing at the Women of the World Poetry Slam, and there was a camera in the back of the room, and I had no idea it was there. I had no idea someone was filming. This ended up becoming one of Button Poetry's first videos that they put up, and I think one of the first ones that went viral. So my audience grew after that with a couple of other poems that also circulated widely, which was cool, but not anything that I planned. I was just creating work that was meaningful to me at the time.
Dear queer young girl, I see you. You don't want them to see you, so you change the pronouns in your love poems to him instead of her. I used to do that. Dear straight people.
It's one thing to share your work when no one is really watching. This is before the invention of YouTube, you know, where it's just you and your notebook and you could be sharing a poem in real time and no one's going to upload it for thousands of people to see or hundreds of people to see, right? But I think as my audience has grown over time and with social media and YouTube and just all of these platforms where anybody can be filming you, I've had to learn to be a little bit more patient with myself and to be more intentional with what I'm ready to share. I think the rule of thumb for me is, if I share this poem, am I able to talk about it and answer questions about it in a way where I'm not a wreck afterwards? And if I'm a wreck afterwards, am I prepared for that too, right? I don't know that I had those questions when I was younger. I just wanted to make sure my family didn't find out that I was gay and that I was sharing poems about girls that I thought were cute. So I think over time, it's changed. And as someone who loves working with young people and they're part of my audience, I want to be able to show up for them as much as I can with their questions. And so I have to be embodied and I have to be in a strong enough headspace to sort of hold all of that. I think about something Douglas Kearney said. He's an amazing poet and performer. I was in a workshop with him and he had this really great analogy about performing really vulnerable work and how to decide, you know, whether to share something in public or not yet. And he said, you know, I hope I get this right, but he says, in jiu-jitsu, you don't give up the most vulnerable part of yourself. You don't let yourself get cut in a place you're already deeply wounded. And maybe that's the part of yourself you don't give up. You don't show yet because it's just too tender. But here are the other parts of yourself that you feel a little bit more ready for. And it's something that I think about and hold on to. I grew up playing basketball in New York City playgrounds, at the PAL, at Millbank, at Riverside Church for AAU, from when I was 7 until my early 20s. I got a basketball scholarship, an athletic scholarship to play at a Division II school in Long Island. And I played in Puerto Rico professionally right after college for a year. I got an invitation to work out with the national team. I went down there and was subsequently invited back to participate in the upcoming season. I played for the Carolina Gigantes for a little while, and then I was traded, LOL, to Arecibo, where my abuela lived for many years, where my tío lived. And it was the first time I went to Puerto Rico without my mom. It was the first time I went to Puerto Rico and it wasn't a family trip. And so I started to build a relationship with the island on my own through that season playing basketball. I went down there speaking, you know, my Spanish was not the best. And I left and I was almost fluent. And I got to spend so much quality time with my tios and my tias. I was driving all over the island. It was just such an amazing experience beyond the basketball part. It was so much bigger than basketball. It was really the beginning of me building a relationship with Puerto Rico as an adult and on my own terms. It's so top of mind right now because I've been working on these basketball sonnets. And for a long time, I thought basketball and poetry were completely separate chapters of my life. So it's been so interesting to return back to that time and actually to realize that poetry and basketball have a deeply symbiotic relationship in my life. The court was a site of becoming for me, of so many stories. I learned the language of my body on the basketball court. Basketball is a performance art. It is where craft meets intuition. It is creative. Basketball is about making an expectation and breaking it.
Curry splits the defense behind the back. Fires a three.
What does Steph Curry do, right?
What a spectacular move! That could be the greatest move I've ever seen.
What does Damian Lillard do?
Lillard, long range three.
What did Allen Iverson do with the deadly crossover? He made you think he was going one way and he went another. That's what makes us lean in when we hear a song or a poem, that element of surprise, right? The undoing of the expectation. I think you're talking about a flower, but what you're actually talking about is maybe your abuelo or the way that he looked at you. So I see so much crossover. Excuse, no pun intended, between basketball and poetry. I didn't set out to be a poet and to do this full time. I would be writing poems regardless. It's like air for me, you know? I got my master's in education. I got a certificate in secondary ed. I was prepared to be a high school English teacher, which I was very excited about. I moved to Philadelphia around 2008, and I was still writing poetry and performing poetry and building relationships with people in the literary scene here and, you know, performing at rallies and, you know, doing the things that were important to me. And luckily, I got a grant from the Leeway Foundation here, and it enabled me to take that first leap to go full time. Sometimes I have to pinch myself. Like when I was at the White House in the Apollo, I had to pinch myself for sure. But it didn't happen overnight. And I still feel like I'm still an emerging writer, you know, in some respects.
Depending on the faith, the most dangerous part of a wealthy man is his index finger. What he points to, who he lands on, a civilization, disposable income, pirate, in cargo short, new world, old order. Meanwhile, we, diaspora, separated by sea, peel platanos and cut them on the same angle our mothers taught us to clap when the plane lands on either shore.
I really care about the work. I really care about my communities. I really care about telling stories that take people from my community that have been relegated to the sidelines, that have been uncelebrated or ignored, and moving them into the ecstatic, into this bigness, because that's how I see my people. We loom large, no matter the forces of systemic oppression. Queer people and Latinx people and women, we loom large. I just hope to put my head down and great work that means something to me and hopefully others as well. And I hope to get it all down before my time is up. And I know in my family, if I don't document some of this stuff, some of these stories, they won't be told. And if they're not told, then they may not be remembered. That to me is what I'm up against, I think, is not wanting to pass with all these stories in my body, you know? I want to get it all out before it's too late.
Denise is currently putting together her debut collection of poetry. She's also working on capturing stories of queer Latina elders and writing about climate solutions. This episode was produced by Alejandra Salazar and edited by Daisy Contreras and mixed by JJ Carubin. The Latino USA team includes Andrea Lopez Cruzado, Marta Martinez, Mike Sargent, Julieta Martinelli, Victoria Estrada, Reinaldo Leaños Jr., Patricia Zulbarán, and Julia Rocha. with help from Raul Perez. Our editorial director is Fernanda Santos. Special thanks to the Adrian Brinkerhoff Poetry Foundation, the 92nd Street Y, and Matthew Thompson. Additional thanks to Button Poetry. Our director of engineering is Stephanie LeBeau. Our senior engineer is Julia Caruso. Our associate engineer is Gabriela Baez. Our marketing manager is Luis Luna.
Listen to all of our Latino USA podcast episodes on Amazon Music.
Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. And remember, no te vayas. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by New York Women's Foundation. The New York Women's Foundation, funding women leaders that build solutions in their communities and celebrating 30 years of radical generosity. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. And the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide.
Okay. And we're back. Why do I feel like Alice Piazecki in The L Word?
What was the pot?
Gosh, I can't remember her pot. Oh, it was called The Chart. I think it was called The Chart. Okay, doesn't matter, but gay references.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between, and they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino.
From PRX.